Hey, it's Dr. Trek, Larry Nemechek, coming at you straight out of Portal 47. And you're listening to the Shuttle Pod. Oh, I see what you did there.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Shuttle Pod episode 28, and we're going to be discussing sort of a 50th anniversary roundup. It seemed like a good thing for us to do at the end of the year. We're recording this on December 19th. My name is Jared Whitley, and I am here with my good friends, Brian Drew.
Hey, everybody.
And, of course, Kayla Iacovino, the captain of the Trek movie.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Okay, so 50th anniversary, right? We got some interesting things we're going to talk about. We're going to do a little recap of Beyond, talk a little bit about what the 51st anniversary is going to look like, and then talk about some broader issues connected to Star Trek fandom. Thank you for tuning into us, as always. All right, so the final box office tallies for Beyond are in, and guys, how did we do this time around?
Yeah. I guess we underperformed, didn't we?
Yeah.
Large margin.
In sports jargon, when you have a bad year, you just call it a building year, right? Because the idea is, well, we didn't do great this year, we'll do great next year. But it's just kind of sad to look at the numbers that Beyond made less money domestically than Into Darkness, which had made less money domestically than 2009. And Beyond also weighed way less than Into Darkness made internationally. Into Darkness made $238 million outside of the United States, which was great, right? But Beyond made only $184 million. So that is not the kind of data point that gets business executives excited about greenlighting the next three movies.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, they don't see more. If they don't see a higher gross in the next picture, it puts the whole thing in doubt. And this one didn't even come close, as you just mentioned, too.
Yeah, it didn't even come close. And there's it wasn't even like a competitive year where, like, I mean, like, one of the reasons that people say Nemesis did so badly is because it came out right before Lord of the Rings: The Two Towers. But there was nothing else really competing with Beyond, because the two big movies this summer were Captain America and Finding Dory, and they'd both come out a long time before.
Right, and the Bourne movie came out a couple of weeks later, but it wasn't very good.
Yeah,
so it wasn't like it was sucking all the air out of the box office or anything like that. So yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, the movie was not a masterpiece, but it was a lot of fun. It was certainly an improvement over Into Darkness.
Absolutely.
They made every effort that they could to give it, you know, the 50th anniversary a nice little salute. They gave the original cast a nice little, you know, shout out.
That was a great moment right there when you looked at the picture. I got all choked up at that.
And you don't expect it, too, and that's the beautiful thing about it. I literally was in the theater going, aw.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
It was like looking at an old family photo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was. Also, it's an interesting choice because that picture was from Final Frontier. It wasn't a picture from Undiscovered Country or from something else.
Yeah, I wonder why they chose that particular picture.
Yeah, it was weird. Be interesting to find out when we have a director's commentary or something to listen to.
Indeed.
Okay, now the other thing is that I read this somewhere, so I thought it was an interesting data point, is this is only the second time that we've had a Star Trek movie come out the same year as a Star Wars movie. The other one
that's amazing.
You'd think there'd be more intersection, but the only other time was 2002 when both Nemesis and Attack of the Clones came out.
Yeah, two great sci-fi spectaculars.
Fantastic year for sci-fi. Fantastic year.
Awful. Oh, I'll tell you one thing. I'd rather watch Nemesis over Attack of the Clones.
Is there a third option?
No, there's no third option here. You got to pick one.
Okay. All right. I will watch Nemesis with you. I will get the popcorn.
You must watch Picard in his Dune buggy.
Oh, yeah. The Argus. Is that what it was called?
The Argos, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Or Argo. Yeah.
Argo, anyway. Argo, yeah.
I think it's like a Jason and the Argonauts reference.
rugged outdoorsman Jean-Luc Picard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the enlightened French philosopher who reads Shakespeare and drinks tea, and is known for trying. What's that, Caleb?
But remember that. I mean, to be fair, and I'm not necessarily defending the Captain Picard dune buggy, but to be fair, movie Picard, as we've discussed, is a different beast than TV Picard. And movie Picard has a wild side to him.
Yes,
where
he does.
Where he destroys his little ships in fits of rage. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Something happened to movie Picard when he went through menopause.
Where yeah, I was about to say. He's like male menopause.
Overcompensating.
Midlife crisis dune buggy.
Exactly. Yeah,
but a midlife crisis that goes on for like a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously. Now, do we think that Beyond will get any major awards recognitions? Because the Star Trek 2009 was the first and only time that Star Trek got an Academy Award. It won for makeup and hairstyle, and then it got three other nominations: visual effects, sound editing, sound mixing. And Star Trek Into Darkness got a visual effects nomination. Do we think we'll see anything for Beyond when the awards are announced?
I hope so. I thought that there was some nice work done in it. I mean, the competition will be fierce, obviously, with all the other genre offerings that are out there.
Which is one of the reasons I mentioned Rogue One is I don't see it. Because I thought the special effects, the way they integrate the CGI and the action sequences is beautiful in Rogue One.
Yeah.
At no point do I say they're just running in front of a blue screen. It all looks real.
I agree.
Well, yep, great point. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Where in the prequels, it really felt like the entire, which they were entirely shot on blue screen, and it felt like it. I didn't even think about that until you said it. It felt very real.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was great. The last act of that movie was terrific. The one thing where I think, where I really liked Star Trek Beyond was the art direction, which just like the way the Yorktown space station looked.
Yeah, the Yorktown. Oh, I love the Yorktown. The Yorktown was legit. God.
Yeah.
So, like, I love the scene where the guy, maybe I've already mentioned this to you guys, where the guy walks into what looks like a phone booth and he hits a button and he beams out. And I'm like, oh, yeah, of course they'd have little phone booth transporters. Why wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, and then the depiction of the Universal Translator.
That was interesting. When,
I really liked that. So I hopefully,
The only thing I didn't understand the utility of displaying it that way. Like it was beautiful to have this stuff all floating around and everything, but like the personal transporters, that has obvious utility, and I could be like, that's realistic. I could see that happening in the future. This one looked more like I don't know, those like promo shots that you get from companies when they're like, in 50 years from now, this is what technology will look like. And it's like, it's cool, but I don't see why you would want that.
Yeah.
Good
like
point.
When everyone, and they're doing this again, this is coming back, everything is like clear tablets. They're like acrylic, like your phone is an acrylic tablet that is, you know, turns to clear glass basically when you're not using it, and then stuff is displayed onto it, but it's always translucent, and I'm like, that would be really hard to read. Can you imagine like reading a book on a window?
Yeah,
it's cool.
It cool in theory, but not in practical use, I guess.
Yeah, well, I at least question whether it would be practical, but I did think that was pretty cool the way it looked.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, hopefully I'm gonna keep my fingers crossed, and hopefully they will get a nomination. And hopefully even win. That'd be great for art direction. Or I guess it's best production design. The winners the last few years have been Mad Max Fury Road, The Grand Budapest Hotel, Great Gatsby, Lincoln, Hugo, and Alice in Wonderland. So it seems like an award category that's wide open, where they don't always pick period pieces. They do speculative fiction as well. So if there was ever a Star Trek that deserved it, I think it's Beyond.
What about makeup and hairstyle?
It's possible. I mean, that's
also...
There were
a lot of makeup. I mean, Jayla had makeup, and then Crawl, obviously, was a huge makeup.
Right,
yeah. It could. I don't know. I don't know what the decision-making on that, because I feel like makeup and hairstyle is often one of those where if an Oscar bait movie isn't getting any of the big awards, they'll throw out one of those. Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway. See, that's the thing for me. When you say, do we expect any awards? I'm like, I have no idea, honestly. Because it seems like there's so much, I mean, they always say it's all politics, but it seems like that's true. And I don't understand any of that politics that's happening really in Hollywood. So it's kind of beyond me to even make a guess as to what would get what award.
Thing I hope is I put a lot of faith in the the Hugo Award, because that's like the mm-hmm. Academy Award for science fiction. And Star Trek has not done very well in the Hugos, to be honest. It's only won 4 times in 50 years.
Mm.
2009.
Who?
I'm sorry?
You remember which things won?
Off the top of your head? It was City on the Edge of Forever, right. The Inner Light, All Good Things, and then one other.
Which
are but all good stuff.
All
yeah,
good
no, great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's even
worthy things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at like the late 60s, there are years when Star Trek just completely sweeps the nominations for the Hugos. So,
oh, nice.
You
know,
yeah. It's really cool. So that's what I want to see again. Hopefully, even if Beyond doesn't get something, then maybe Discovery next year will hit it like a house on fire.
I hope so.
Anyway, well, there you go. Anything else about Star Trek Beyond?
No, I mean, if you want to talk about, I mean, we've covered this before. Do we want to discuss what, you know, how we feel about a possible fourth film?
Well,
sure.
Do we feel that the box office is going to, the current box office is going to allow there to be a fourth film, or what do we think about that?
Yeah, I think the story hasn't changed. I think it's worth bringing up solely because there's been some flurry in the news, what, a week or so ago. About a picture tweeted by Simon Pegg. You guys see this? It's a picture of Simon Pegg and Doug Jung, and they're sitting with their names on their coffee mugs, and they're like writing something on their laptops. And I can't remember what the caption of what the tweet was, but it was something like, you know, hard at work or something like that. And it's them too. And they had been the writers of Beyond. And so everyone was like, oh my God, is this, Star Trek 4 confirmed? But who knows what on earth that was? I think they were at Bad Robot. They had a little Bad Robot guy. So they were probably at the Bad Robot studios, and they might have even said that in the tweet, like, at Bad Robot, hard at work.
Yeah, I think so. I think they did.
So that's like a little hint that maybe something Star Trek-y is happening, but honestly, it could be anything.
It could just be them having coffee.
Right.
Yeah.
And so much of the media went off on that, and they were like, oh my God, this is confirmation that there's a fourth movie. There's nothing to indicate that.
Yeah,
nothing.
I agree.
Nothing at all.
It's like, come on, guys.
But
between that,
I think because if you're someone who hasn't delved into the details on these little things coming out between this and JJ trying to promote the fourth film before Beyond was even out and saying Chris Hemsworth is going to be in it and blah, blah, blah. If all you had heard were these superficial, you know, if you just read those headlines and moved on with your day, you might think this was confirmation of a fourth. And so I think a lot of news stories were like, oh, remember Jake, just like JJ said, and it's rumored to star Chris Hemsworth and blah, blah. And now they're going on and on about all this stuff that has no really basis in reality because these little flurries of news have come out. But yeah, I think for me, and I imagine for you guys, the story on the fourth, whether or not there will be a fourth, hasn't changed. That, you know, my guess is still probably no, but that's a guess.
Yeah. I still don't feel like there'll be a fourth film.
I think the thing that could bring a fourth film would be if, and I believe this is what happened with Undiscovered Country, where Final Frontier underperformed, but then TNG was so popular, they said, okay, there's a market for this. So maybe if Discovery is able to reignite interest, then maybe people say, okay, there's more money to be made here. Maybe.
The motivation for making the Undiscovered Country was the 25th anniversary.
Sure. See, there was also that. Ah. There was also that. And so it was a lot of free publicity that year, too.
It's funny because it was the opposite this year, right? I mean, that's how a lot of people have felt, that there's a bunch of stuff sort of in the works and happening this year, but it wasn't taken advantage of by the studios in terms of marketing the 50th anniversary. I think a lot of people feel like it was an underwhelming anniversary, even though there were things that were coming out anyway, like Beyond.
Right. No, I agree. I felt like we had a lot more hope at the beginning of the year. There was a lot more energy and a lot more excitement about what was coming. And then as things progressed, it kind of fell kind of flat.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Things felt a bit underwhelming.
Yeah. And the thing that I kept feeling was, you know, there was nobody in board meetings who was like the Star Trek flag bearer. Who was saying, okay, we need to be doing this, we need to be doing this. And if it ever came up, it was always like, oh yeah, okay. Well, I guess that's a thing. But there was no champion.
That's exactly how it felt.
Yeah, yeah. It did feel rudderless at times.
Rudderless.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Yeah, it did. Which is shocking for a franchise that, you know, makes millions of dollars a year in licensing alone.
Yep.
I think there was certainly more enthusiasm coming from the fans. I think just being, you know, on Trek Movie and seeing the behind the scenes of, you know, the numbers of people we get and the kind of interactions that we get on the site, solely from that perspective. And again, that's just the perspective of our one site. It does seem like people were coming to the site with the idea that, I should sort of check in on Star Trek right now. It's the 15th anniversary. You know, what's going on? Like, what are the new cool things coming up? So I feel like there was excitement from the fan side of things, but then once they came to the table, they sort of found it empty, you know, found it lacking. So they kind of left, maybe left a bit disappointed. So I think if CBS and Paramount, I think both of them dropped the ball in a couple of important places this year, that if they hadn't done that, if they had picked it up and actually run with it, I think it wouldn't have actually taken that much effort to invigorate the fan base. Because I feel like the fans were there waiting.
And they also had a movie to promote at the same time.
That's the first big ball that they dropped, was promoting Too Little, Too Late for Beyond. Dropping that bad trailer, the teaser with the sabotage music, which honestly, I'm going to be one of the few people probably at this level of the fan base that didn't have a huge problem with Beastie Boys in the film. I had a huge problem with it in the teaser, and because it was totally the anti theme of everything Trek to me.
Right.
But after
which proves the studio doesn't really know how to market.
They didn't know how to market. They didn't know what they had. They didn't know who their fans were. And so they blew it with that, and they knew they blew it. And so they didn't recover from it because I think they were gun shy afterwards and they didn't put anything else up quickly enough. And then when they did, it was too little too late. And that was a huge ball drop for Beyond.
Yeah. I mean, they gave it a good try when they had that event that you went to at Paramount. I mean, that was very cool.
It was.
But you're right. It was almost too little, too late at that point. Yeah. What was that, like late May?
It was, right? It was in May.
Yeah. I mean, the movie came out like, what, about 8 weeks after that?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. I felt like they should have been ramping up the marketing machine a lot sooner.
And the event should have been bigger, honestly. And all the people who they gave tickets to should have been able to get into it. Some people were turned away at the door.
Yeah. Yeah. I do give Paramount credit for doing that, though.
I did.
By all accounts, that was really nicely done. So, I mean, you had a great time.
Yeah, certainly. And I was super psyched. I mean, they did what they wanted. They achieved what they wanted to, at least with the people who were there, which was show them a tiny bit of this and a tiny bit of that and get them super psyched. And then show them the next trailer and a couple of extra scenes from the film. And then at that point, they had buttered us up so much that everyone in the audience was just watching these things they put up on the screen, and we were just all cheering and super pumped. So then you walk away with this really positive feeling, and you're like, oh, so you tell your friends, you've got to see it. The scenes looked great and everything. So they achieved what they wanted to with it, but I still say too little, too late.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the word really didn't get out to the general public enough that there was a Star Trek movie coming. I mean, I do think that they made a mistake. Like, if you're going to cast Idris Elba, why are you hiding him under all that latex?
Seriously.
That's so bizarre. What a weird choice. You could have hired so many other actors.
Yeah.
Then if that's all you were going to do, like, it just seems like the waste of a great talent. Mm-hmm. I love Idris Elba.
He's terrific.
He is. He's wonderful. And to hide him under all that and barely show him. And when you finally do show him, he kind of looks weird anyway. He doesn't even look like himself. So I don't know. That I thought was kind of a fail. Like, they didn't really let people know that there was like this cool, you know, popular actor that was going to be in the movie. Mm-hmm. I feel like they undersold that aspect of it in a way.
Also, it never made sense to me how he became a lizard man.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing, Krall was not very well sketched out. Let's be honest. Yeah, he's probably the weakest thing in the movie.
Yeah. No question. I liked everything else in the movie.
Mm-hmm. The villain was the weakest part of the film, I think.
Yeah. It was yet another in a long line of Star Trek villains. I think this is like the fifth movie in a row where we've got a villain that's out for revenge.
Right. Mm. It's like, come on. Monster of the Week.
Yeah, I mean, literally, all three Bad Robot movies, the villain is always out for revenge. It's true. All three of them. It's like, Jesus Christ, guys, you've got nothing else? Really?
Yeah. Although quote-unquote Khan was also, like, fighting for his family, and the bad guy was actually the surrogate for the American military-industrial complex.
Right, right. Whatever.
Yeah. Which, you know, that kind of annoys me, because I'm like, wait, but Khan is a mass murderer. Don't you remember that? And like I've said, you know, you guys are probably sick of me saying that, but there's that episode of TNG where Picard talks about Khan and Hitler in the same breath, right? And because to him, they're both monsters from history. Anyway, so I'm going to back off from that. Anyway, I will say I enjoyed, speaking of the 50th, I did enjoy the convention in Vegas. I thought that they did a terrific job there. I appreciated.
I had a great time.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, for people like us who've been to a lot of these, I really appreciate when the organizers go to great lengths to find something new to entertain us with. And Whoopi Goldberg absolutely did that this year.
Yeah.
It was so much fun to have her there.
Yeah, she was the highlight for me.
Absolutely she was. Well, no. Well, the highlight for me is being able to hang out with you guys. But after that, Whoopi Goldberg.
Obviously.
Of course.
Of course.
I was thinking the other day about how she said she was talking about her hats. And she said, my hats were the ship. You know, she was saying the shape of them were mimicking. And I don't know whether or not that was. Yeah, I don't know if that was really an intentional design element. But when she said it, I feel like it's almost like it's not canon maybe, but that's something that like goes on memory beta, right? Like,
sure.
Like the hats are the ship.
See, my thought. Oh, sorry.
Just the fact that she's the one, like, she came up with this idea and was so excited about it. I was like, one of us.
Yeah. Even she's coming up with her own fanfic, like, explanations
and
stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I had a great time in Vegas. I really did. And like Jared said, they definitely made an effort. They did a lot of different things this year to, like, really celebrate the anniversary. They added an extra day to the con itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt like a party. All week long. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Also, I know some cool people who got to have dinner with Dominic Keating and Nicole DeBoer and Connor Trinneer. And I'm a little jealous of them still half a year later.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Wasn't that, Jared, wasn't that like the one night you had to leave like the night before or something?
Yeah, it was literally that one night.
That was like, the one night where I wasn't there.
Bad day to miss dinner.
Yeah, very bad. Well, that's okay. Somehow I'll manage. I probably would have spent the whole dinner trying to talk with Dominic about like London football rivalries and just try to fake my way through it. And he would have seen right through it and would have been embarrassing for all of us.
That's what John ended
up doing. I was
going
to say John, but he doesn't have to fake his way through it. He actually loved talking about football stuff with him. So.
Dang it.
But can I bring up, and you could take this out if you want, but can I please bring up the dinner we had with Nikki DeBoer, I guess the year before?
Yeah.
And Jared, my favorite moment of this night was your comment to her. I don't know if you want to tell the story.
I feel bad about it.
Awesome. I thought it was hilarious.
I told her the episode where she helps Garrick through his claustrophobia helped me through my claustrophobia. And she's like, oh my gosh, that's so great. It's so nice whenever you hear that it helps people like this. I mean, I've gotten letters from people that say, you know, they had this issue and they watched Star Trek and wow, that's so great to hear it. And then I had to confess, I've never had any claustrophobia. I just thought it was a good episode and I wanted to make it.
Well, I think if in my memory she set you up perfect for it. She was like, "Oh my gosh, is that really true?" And you're like, "No, but I thought it sounded like a good thing to say."
Yeah, that was classic. That was so great.
Thank you. Well, it's either that or I can just gush about how beautiful I think she is, and so I figured that's probably more substantive to talk about that.
I love it.
Yeah, that was great. Those are my favorite convention moments of all time.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
That was good. I was wearing my Shaka When the Walls Fell t-shirt the whole time.
Nice.
All right. Yeah, so we had a good time there. And as good a time as we had in Las Vegas is kind of as bad a time as we had in New York.
Okay, no, I didn't make it to that. Kayla,
me
did
neither.
You make that or was it just Brian? Okay, so
no,
Brian, you
I was going to go and I ended up not being able to go at the last minute.
I was there. It was myself, John, and several other members of the Trek movie staff that went. The more I've thought about it over time, I mean, yeah, it was definitely disappointing. For a variety of different reasons. I think, though, the primary reason why it ended up really being disappointing is because I think CBS had planned on building a lot of the convention around whatever announcements they anticipated Discovery making.
Uh-huh.
And as we all know now, there was a bit of turmoil going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what we got at the convention from Kirsten Baer and Nicholas Meyer was really pretty much nothing. You could almost feel the disappointment in the room when people were just sitting there realizing that we were going to get absolutely nothing of any, you know, real interest. I mean, like, they did talk about, you know, some cool licensing tie-ins and whatnot, but other than that, they said virtually nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were walking around the convention, there were signs for Discovery everywhere, basically saying, do not miss this panel. Do not miss this panel. It's going, you know, it's going to be the big event of the con. And I'm sure CBS had every intention of delivering something really cool that day.
Yeah.
They wanted to set the stage and do something really cool that day so they get people excited and whatnot. And when that didn't happen, I feel like the air went out of the convention.
Yeah, I believe it.
Like, I mean, there were other issues with the con, but like, I really do feel like that if they had like blown people away at a panel that day, that's all the energy level in the place would have went through the roof. People would have been flipping out. Like, if they
they really missed a golden opportunity to bring cast out on stage. They missed all of the convention circuit. They blew it in Hall H. Because they obviously were way behind. If they thought they were going to be ready in time for Hall H for San Diego Comic-Con, they were obviously mistaken. So they blew it. They booked Hall H, and you don't book Hall H unless you have something big.
Right.
So they blew it there. Then they blew it in New York, just in terms of one of these, like the casting announcement, basically. They blew any chance of it in New York, and then there were no shows entirely at New York Comic-Con. And then the convention season was over. And so we're getting casting announcements now, which is great. But can you imagine being at a convention or even not even being there, just looking on your Twitter feed and seeing people like losing their shit over.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the cast. They're on stage right now. They're larger than life. Here are some pictures of them like in the fandom. Like, I mean, Star Wars has held some of these events every once in a while that I, you know, like the Star Wars Celebration and stuff where they announce major things or they show clips from a new movie or something. And they just, that would have, I think that really would have been a really key moment in bringing the franchise together around Discovery. Like, we're all going to go see it anyway, but we're all scared now. We're all really scared that it's going to be bad. Yeah,
that's a good term, Kayla. And I think before we started recording, the thing I said was every time I see a Discovery headline, I'm relieved because that, you know, makes me believe that it actually will happen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there for a long time, there was a concern of like, yeah, sure, this is going to happen. Of course it will. Oh, it got delayed. Oh, how interesting.
Yeah. The delay was announced and then they went into total radio silence. Like nothing. We heard anything for a long time. Remember? We were like wondering like what the hell was happening.
Yep.
And then as it turned out, obviously there were all those problems with Brian Fuller and boy, this is probably going to be a great book written at one point. We're going to find out exactly what the hell happened.
I hope so.
Yeah. And you know, I think that getting the cast, someone who's going to be in the show out on stage, getting them to interact with fans is huge. And I think we're, The tiniest bit we're getting of that from, and I think it's Anthony Rapp. Is he the one who's been tweeting? Anthony Rapp, who's Lieutenant Stamets, who has been cast. He's one of the first few people announced. And he's been tweeting, oh, you know, I can't wait to get into the Star Trek universe and really dive in. Like, my friend lent me the whole collection.
Oh, yeah, he sent out the picture.
And he was tweeting again recently. I think he just tweeted about the episode Sarek. And he was saying how amazing this was such a masterpiece and the acting was just so incredible. Mm. So he's going through and watching all these episodes. And I think that makes me feel excited as a fan. Because I'm like, this guy's a real person. It's not just a picture of him in an IMDb profile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a real person, a real actor. He had, you know, I feel some kind of interaction with him just reading his tweets. So I think that's super cool. And I think that's what we could have gotten if we had seen them on stage.
Again, there was nobody in the board meetings to say, hey, we need to have somebody in New York at this thing.
You know what though? I think there was, and I think they knew that. I mean, who knows? I'm totally guessing because obviously I wasn't in the board meetings. But my mm-hmm. feeling is like they knew it and they couldn't get it together in time.
Yeah, I don't. And to be honest, I still don't understand why Brian was not in Vegas.
Uh huh.
Yeah,
I don't understand why he wasn't in New York.
Yeah,
both of those, especially New York. I mean, if you want to say, okay, look, you know what, Vegas is Creation's thing, whatever. We don't want to like unveil our big stuff there. Okay, fine. But CBS was running the New York convention. It was their convention. How do you not have the Brian Fuller at that event? I just don't understand. And I guess it goes back to the fact that there was a lot of turmoil going mm-hmm. on in the background that we simply were not aware of. Although we did hear things at the con in New York that CBS was not thrilled with Brian. But you hear these things sometimes and it's like, okay, whatever. You know, you don't know if there's any validity to it. But as it turned out, there probably was quite a bit of validity to it.
Yeah. The more we learn, the worse things sound.
Yeah, he definitely it did not end well. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Yeah. So now, you know, we can go into a whole thing about Discovery. You know, Akiva Goldsman, even though I don't think he's officially been given a title, at least we haven't seen one officially put out by CBS. But I would assume he is the showrunner.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the executive producer. And he's probably been retooling the show since he took it over. I mean, nobody's come out and said that, but I'm guessing that he is taking some of what Fuller came up with and is changing it.
Well, yeah. Reading between the lines of the official CBS press releases, it really sounds like they're saying Akiva Goldsman is Brian Fuller's replacement.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they're having other people sort of step up to help fill in the role that he's left empty. But it sounds like that he is the replacement for Brian.
So, does it sound like they're starting over? Like they're just throwing out his show Bible?
No.
I don't think so. I think they're saying, you know, that the bones and the heart of the show are still intact. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it may be that CBS wasn't happy with the direction, the theme and the feel that Brian wanted for the show, which is, you know, so that's something he'll no longer be involved, you know, in the cutting room and, you know, in actually any of the actual making of everything. He just sort of set the thing in motion and now has stepped away. And so much more, I think, can happen to shape what this thing ends up being that while the bones and the heart may still be there, it can become a different show, I think, still. But yeah, we'll see.
I agree.
I mean, no one will ever know what the Brian Fuller version of the Discovery will have looked like because it will never exist. So it's hard to say how different it's going to be.
See, and that kind of reminds me of the original screenplay that we were going to have for Star Trek Beyond that just got discarded when they kicked off Bob Orci as the director.
Yeah. I think
which would have had William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy in it, theoretically.
I think we'll see that screenplay one day.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm friends with J.D. Payne, who was one of the writers on that, and I've coyly said, well, you know, if you ever want to do a favor for your friend who writes for a website called Trek Movie,
right?
And he's very coyly shoots me down. But maybe at some point, maybe there's, you know, whenever, whatever non-disclosure agreement he signed wears off. We'll see.
Yeah, what's the statute of limitations on non-disclosure agreements?
Yeah, it's a good question. I know that Bob Orci had people ask him constantly if they could see it. So I would assume at some point when Bob no longer gives a shit.
Yep.
he'll put it out there.
Or the other thing is, you know, like we saw with the Deadpool movie. I mean, the studio had said, no, we're not going to do anything about this. And so they put together some test footage and quote unquote, it got leaked on the internet, right? Which they put it out as part of their marketing campaign to say, no, you idiots, pay attention to this. People want to see a movie about this character. So who knows what can happen in modern day and age. But we do have some more information about Discovery if we want to plow into that. We do have our leading lady.
Yes, huge news. Just happened a few days ago.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kayla, do you wanna lead the charge on this one?
You know, I can but I was AFK when this whole thing went down.
You were.
Yeah, all week last week I was off the grid and I'm, you know, barely checking my phone at all and I see some chatter going on in the Trek movie Slack that we have, and all of a sudden you guys were awesome and had this story up on the website right away. So I haven't even, I've just read the article on the website. So I've not been a part of that at all.
I don't even know her name off the top of my head.
Sonequa Martin Green. Thank you. Been cast as Lieutenant Commander Rainsford. Her big claim to fame is she's on The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. Which I did not watch.
Neither have I. I watched the first season of Walking Dead and that was it. So now I will say though, I know Walking Dead is extremely popular. And so if there's able to be any carryover of the Walking Dead fan base to start watching Discovery, that will definitely be a boon.
Oh, hell yeah. But I'm heartened by the fact that everybody who heard about the casting, who knows the show, was thrilled that she got cast.
Oh, good.
Like, apparently she's a very strong actress. Oh, so, great. Like, yeah. So, I'm excited.
Me too. I think this sounds great. I love that it's a woman, which we knew it was going to be. I love that it's a woman of color, which we were pretty sure it was going to be. And I think
I love that it's not the captain.
Me too. I absolutely love that.
To me, mm-hmm. That's the most important thing, because it's like, okay, we don't need to see another person talk about, the burdens of command or whatever. We need to talk about someone who looks out the view screen from a different station.
Totally. So, a story from a new perspective.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, this seems like it's got a lot of win, and that will give the show some much needed momentum. Now we also have some names for some of the villains, I guess, or antagonists maybe is a better word. They announced not one but three Klingons, mm-hmm. and I love that only one of them has a name that begins with the letter K. We have Dacumva, who's the leader, Cole, who's his protege, and then Laurel, the battle deck commander of the Klingon ship. So it seems like they've got a deep bench of villains there who are ready to strive against our heroes. So I like that idea that they realize, because one of the reasons that I think Deep Space Nine is so great is from the first episode to the last episode, Gul Dukat, the main antagonist, is just as important as any of the other characters on the show, right? Mm-hmm. And so to put your bad guys out there front, you know, like you said, we in the movies they keep having weak villains. It's like they're setting up here to have a really good trio of adversaries. So I'm very excited to see that.
The way you're talking about them as a trio of adversaries, just as I just had a little daydream about like a very Three Stooges style, but with Klingon makeup.
Well, isn't that kind of what like Kor and Kang and Koloff were in Deep Space Nine?
Exactly. Yeah. A modern day Warriors 3.
Yeah, three Klingons walk into a bar.
a monk, a clone, and a Ferengi walk into a bar.
I have to tell you, my initial reaction when I heard that there was going to be this group of Klingons and that they were going to, you know, obviously be part of the series throughout the season, it made me wonder if the show is going to have kind of a Game of Thrones vibe to it.
Yeah, I'm sure that phrase has been used.
In what way?
Yeah. I know, well, just hopping from one ship to another and seeing the situation there.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like
having jumping around a lot.
I mean, I think what you mean when you say Game of Thrones is the idea of we have antagonists, but we don't have good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
Everyone is the hero of their own story.
Yeah, but there are some very clear bad guys in Game of Thrones as well.
Sure. But yes, there are some people who are very evil, some people who are very, very good. But what they want to try to do is show that in this power vacuum after the death of King Robert, everybody wants to be the king and everybody thinks they deserve to be the king or queen.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Anyway, that was just my initial impression when I heard the casting.
Especially when they describe him as Dacumva, the Klingon leader seeking to unite the Klingon houses. That phrase is kind of Game of Thrones-y.
Hmm.
Okay, and then let's see. We also have Michelle Yao. That was the first bit of news, I guess.
I love her.
Yep.
Yeah, she was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yep.
Wait, or is it Crouching Dragon, Hidden Tiger? I can't remember.
Crouching Tiger.
Dragons do not crouch. And she is the captain. First, she had a different name, but then recently I see we've reported that her name is Captain Gorgiou of the USS Shenzhou. I'm probably saying that wrong. And note that, so she's some kind of supporting character, but she's not the captain of the Discovery, because I assume the Discovery is the name of the ship and not like something else.
Right. Which is, and I think her not being captain of the Discovery is a common misconception, because any, what, you know, Trekkies I meet on this out on the street, if you will, whenever we talk about casting and they're like, oh, and we have the captain cast, right? And I'm like, we have a captain, not the captain of the Discovery. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we have.
Yeah, as of this podcast, we still do not have the captain of the Discovery.
Yeah, okay. But it does, I mean, that's okay, because the lieutenant commander is the most important role. So that is the biggest
casting.
She's sure, the lead.
We have the protagonist.
Yes. Yeah, we got the lead.
So that's, and then, finally. And it seems like that's the thing that they had been struggling with. At least that was the rumor, is that this was the role that they had trouble filling. So the fact that they filled it makes me feel like things are getting tidied up now.
Yep.
I think it would be cool if, even if they're going to trickle out news to us, or if things are going to get leaked little by little, once they have the main people all announced, if they do some kind of thing, event, maybe where they get them all together, even if it's just like a picture of them hanging out on the set or whatever, and you can't see anything, but it'd be cool to see them all in one place. Like, these are your people.
Yeah.
Here they are, ready to do this show.
Or get like a set visit, you know, get Patrick Stewart to come visit the set and sort of like, you know, give them his blessing and send out some pictures on Twitter. I think that would be good.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we have Doug Jones and Anthony Rapp. You'd mentioned Mr. Rapp before. Uh-huh. Doug Jones, of all these names, he's the one I recognize a little bit more, because I think he was in the Hellboy movies.
That's right. Yeah, he was in Hellboy.
He's playing a science officer named Lieutenant Saru, and he's some kind of alien. I wonder if he's going to be a CGI character or if he'll just have some kind of makeup. I can't remember if I read that or if I just imagined that, but I kind of get the idea that he might be a CGI character.
I would guess prosthetics, because he or his face is already, his body shape and face are already kind of alien looking. He's kind of long and lanky. And I think he's played a lot of roles where he's played some strange kind of character like that. So I could totally see them just putting some prosthetics on him and calling him an alien.
Mm-hmm. Could be. I mean, or they might do some kind of motion capture sure thing, like with Dr. Phlox, where he's got prosthetics, and then periodically there'll be some part of him that's
augmented. Yeah.
Yeah. Like whenever Phlox smiled, like they did a weird thing, which was cute.
And it looked great.
It did. Mm-hmm. It looked really good. And the first time they did it in the pilot, it's like, oh, that's clever. So Doug Jones, we'll keep an eye on that. Okay. And I love that Lieutenant Stamets, that they've given him a very, very specific scientific function, and that he is an astromycologist, which is some kind of fungus expert, some kind of space fungus expert.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they emphasized that.
Yeah, that was really cool.
In the press release, they're like, by the way, he's an astromycologist.
Yeah, that shows some deep nerd understanding right there, that we're not just going to have one science officer, we're going to have two science officers.
Yeah, right. I always thought this idea that the science officers, like, it seems like to most people, the science officers on the ship just do science in general. And
yes.
No one does that. Yep. That's not a thing.
Nope.
Right.
So it's cool to see them have special. And so every once in a while they'd have like you see a lot of geologists in TOS, actually, which shout out right there to geologists.
Sure.
But a lot of times they're actually just miners. But that's another discussion for another day. But it is, so it is cool when you see every once in a while, but to have someone that's a main part of the crew have a specialty, like the scientist in me is just very proud of that.
Sure. Cause it's more, that's verisimilitude.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Same thing with like engineering though. I mean, like if you're an engineer, you'd have like a specialty.
True.
Yep.
Like when Barclay starts, he's a specific kind of like diagnostic technician. Right. And that's his thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just one of these guys who is constantly spouting off technobabble and can turn rocks into replicators, but he's got a specific job.
Yeah, and it'd be cool if, you know, because every spaceship might not need a fungus expert, or every ship might not need this specific kind of diagnostic technician, but they do need someone to fulfill some kind of science role, and so you get a little bit of variety from ship to ship. I mean, that's what happens in real science labs.
Sure.
Modern day on Earth.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You may have, you know, a bunch of professors teaching, you know, astronomy, let's say at one university, and one university might have a strong suit in like learning how stars form, and the other university might have a strong suit in understanding the, you know, distribution of galaxies, or I don't know, I'm not an astronomer, but you know what I mean? So then each starship would have a different feel because they're, you know, it's an expression of all the people on the ship coming together to make something bigger than they are. And so each of them are donating their little area of expertise to make a really unique group of people. So that if you just rotate a bunch of people off the ship and put a whole bunch of people, new people on the ship, it's a totally different ship now, because not only are the people different and their experiences are different, but their expertises are different as well. So they might respond differently to a situation.
There you go. Well said. All right. You have different expertises to deal with different space stuff.
Sure.
Yep.
Space stuff.
Space stuff.
Yeah, so there's a lot of exciting things, I think, coming up for Discovery. Getting more and more information about all the cast members and what their jobs are. And of course, it's really easy to go and think about trying to extrapolate and assume what the whole show is going to be about. But I think the most exciting thing is the fact that we actually have very little information about Discovery so far. And as much as we want to try to imagine what we think the show will be, we will not know until it actually comes out. So that is still a very exciting moment to look forward to.
So we have reasons to be optimistic.
Yep.
Definitely.
Definitely. Start shooting next month, and hopefully we'll learn a little bit more then.
Upward and onward to 2017, 51st anniversary, to infinity and beyond, or insert your favorite catchphrase.
Well said. Well said.
So I think that about does it for this episode of the Shuttle Pod. But Jared, I think you might have a Treknikdote for us.
I do. And I think I have the Treknikdotiest Treknikdote I've ever shared. Yes. Right?
All right.
Yeah, this is a level of esoterica that where it just shows that so much of this franchise is infused into my brain. Okay, so I'm in a school program right now. Everyone brings their laptops to school. I always bring a mouse pad and a mouse because I hate using the little trackpad thing. And most of my classmates, like, that's how they do everything, right? Like, we're doing complicated stuff in Excel or whatever, and they're just, you know, drawing their little finger around the trackpad. And I can't stand that. I feel like, and this is, you know, first world problem, whatever. I feel like I don't have any control when I'm using that. I can't right click. I have no idea what to do. And my finger gets sore, right? So one day, I forget my mouse pad at home, so I don't have that, right? And I'm there, and I'm trying to keep up with everybody. I'm trying to do everything. My finger just starts hurting so much. And I remember, do you guys remember that episode where Counselor Troi loses her empathy? It's called The Lost, fourth season of TNG. And she loses it at one point, and she shouts to Beverly, I think it is, "How do you people live like this?"
Yeah.
And so I said to my classmates, I said to some of them, "How do you people live like this?" Because I can't do this without a mouse.
Did they have any idea what you were talking about?
No, of course not. Of course not.
They're like, "Dude, what's wrong?"
But I was sure to bring my mouse the next day.
Can I say that it is adorable not only that you bring a mouse, but also that you bring a mouse pad?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I gotta have a mouse pad. It's just I feel so much. My computing is so much smoother with it. I'm glad you find it adorable.
Is it a, well, I haven't used a mouse pad in years just because the optical mice that I use, I think, don't really need them anymore.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Do you have a Star Trek mouse pad?
I do own one. I do not have it with me. It's actually my Star Trek mouse pad. It's got an image of Picard in the view screen, and it says resistance is futile, and when you kind of move it, he switches to Locutus.
Oh, it's like one of those hologrammy ones that look different from different angles.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. All pretty, right, so there fancy. You go. Christmas present. It is Christmas coming up in a few days, so obviously, if you have any Star Trek mouse pads laying around,
there it is.
Jared Whitley needs one for his school.
Yes. Support education. Okay, thank you, everybody. This was episode 28 of the Shuttle Pod. This is December 19th, 2016. Thank you for tuning in, as always. Be sure to follow us on social media and all that good stuff. Recommend us to your friends. And be sure to keep tuning in next year, 2017, which will be another important milestone in Star Trek history. It will be the 10th anniversary of Trek Movie.
Woohoo!
Oh.
We'll have to have a party.
Oh, yeah. At least.
All right, let's start planning this now. Party 2017.
You got it.
All right, bye, guys.
Take care, everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody.